I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-725-4429. 1-800-725-4429. That's 1-800-725-4429. 1-800-725-4429.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20, because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. It's another beautiful weekend here in Washington. I'm so happy to be here.
It's not the weekend.
It is the weekend.
We're recording.
Oh, we're pre-recording?
We're pre-recording.
I thought I was faking it. I thought I was faking it.
Do you lie to people?
I lie to you all the time.
Well, I guess I should be used to it.
Actually, we got a very interesting show. A lot of diversity, a lot of things to talk about, but there's a huge Baltimore theme to it, and I think that's...
It's completely unintentional.
And as a Nationals fan, I have a problem with it. But other than that...
I don't know why.
Because the O's are kicking butt and taking names, and the Nats are not.
Don't do what I know. I have no idea.
From the fabulous Four Seasons on the Inner Harbor in Baltimore, we've got Jonah Kim with us from Pabu. He's the executive chef in the Four Seasons. And
it's
we're
not really the Inner Harbor. Harbor East, right?
Well, it's...
It's Harbor East.
Harbor East, David.
Yeah, it's wrong. You're wrong.
I'm going to start it today.
Wait.
I'm going to start it today.
You're going to school me on my own show already?
I've been sitting here nervous.
All right.
That you're going to get me, so...
No, I will get you in a minute, and you know on what.
Yeah.
All right, and...
Harbor East. You didn't even say Jonah Kim is here.
I did say Jonah Kim is here.
Woo! Okay, Jonah Kim is here.
Marriage is hard work.
And also from Baltimore, new to our show, Executive Chef Chris Becker and mixologist Tim Riley. They are from the Bagby Group. They are owner of Baltimore's Fleet Street Kitchen, Bagby Pizza, 1010 American Bistro, and Cunningham Farm. We're going to find out about all the fun things they're doing up there. It sounds like they have a lot going on.
Yes.
So we're going to get into that.
And the name Brain Food should ring a bell with a lot of people out there. Paul Dom, who's the executive director, is here with Nadimo Umachuku, who is with Brain Food.
I made him say that because I didn't want to butcher your name. I'm terrible at names.
Why don't you tell the world?
Everybody knows. It's not
it's a 50,000 watt signal. I'm sure there are people in Pennsylvania now who know.
Okay.
But Brain Food has a very cool fundraiser coming up on June 30th at Post featuring in the Monaco Hotel featuring really all the top chefs from D.C. So that should be a lot of fun to hear about.
A couple of slouches.
Except for Scott Juneau?
Scott Juneau.
He sucks. All right, so.
Okay, and we're very excited. Formerly of Citronelle and one of the D.C. area's most renowned sommeliers, he's in with us today. He is now at the Little Gem. I always call it a Little Gem. It's over in Alexandria, Bastille. He is now pouring his wine over there. It's Mark Slater. I can't believe he's never been in studio before, but he is finally joining us.
I wanted you every week, Mark. It's
her
fault.
Yeah, he has. It's me. I haven't booked you. It's my fault. But we're so excited that you're here to join us today and tell us about all the fabulous things you're doing over there.
I want to start with Mark.
Can you start with Mark. Have at it.
All right, Mark. So here's a question I have for you, because you spent years at Citronelle, which is a very fine dining kind of environment. And the food at Bastille is no less fine, but it's a lot more casual and relaxed. So how does that impact your choices for a wine list? Do you have to think about kind of diner's posture and, you know, the kind of the high-end setting versus a more casual setting when you're picking your wines?
Yeah, most definitely.
I was right.
Well, okay, but in what way? So coming from, I mean, you've been at lots of different restaurants before. Yeah. So tell us how when you join Christophe and Michel Pitot over at Bastille, how you went about going into an already, a wine list that was already there, that was already created. So how do you go through that and make it your own?
You empty all the bottles.
Right. Start from scratch.
Start there, yeah.
Say the previous guy was an idiot. And you start?
No, I was lucky that the list is primarily French, which is what I specialize in.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of contacts, having been doing this for close to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I replaced the things that I thought needed replacing.
In what way? I mean, what does that mean?
Better vintages, better producers.
Mm-hmm.
The main difference, Citronelle was one of those celebration restaurants where nobody cared what things cost. Mm. And
I did.
Oh, those days.
I did. When I stroked a credit card bill for like $750.
You there, David.
It was more than that for New Year's. Yeah, I cared a lot.
I must have nailed you over
there.
Yeah,
you did.
Right?
You did. You were standing behind me like...
Everybody's like, God, I think you nailed a lot of people in this room, actually.
Yeah. It's surprising.
This could also be another show altogether.
So you may not get out of here alive, actually. So, but when you're picking all those, do you not have to have in mind the kind of, you know, basically get inside the head of Christophe Pitot and even Michelle, who's here with us, Michelle Garbet Pitot? Not bad. I remembered your maiden name. That ain't bad. But, I mean, don't you have to kind of psych them out, too, when you're picking these wines and sort of balance between what you think diners will want? And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think things that are too obscure are very difficult to sell. You can't hand sell an entire wine list. The luxury I had at Citronelle was it hit all the price points from from $40 up to $4,000.
From ridiculous to painful.
But so now that you're not in those price ranges, and you're still serving terrific wines at Bastille.
Yeah.
That must be a little bit more of a challenge and a little more fun.
It is more of a challenge, yeah.
You're not saying it's more fun.
It's certainly more fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got
I'll
his
tell
fun face on.
Wearing a tuxedo every night takes all the fun out of going to the opera.
Yeah, okay. I'll think of that Sunday night at the Rammies.
Yeah.
Poor me. So you brought something for us to taste today, I see.
Some delicious Alsatian wine, yeah.
Mm. So what are we starting with?
We need to start with the Riesling, the Grand Cru Riesling from the vineyard called Rangen.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very tiny, extremely steep. It's a 70-degree grade in this vineyard. It's very difficult to harvest because it's so steep.
Mm-hmm.
It's been famous for 1,200 years. It's first mentioned in print in the 800s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a powerful, sensational dry Riesling.
Okay.
All right, quick question.
Yeah.
And then
why does everybody pour a Riesling?
No, quick question. Alsace-Lorraine has been like a football passed back and forth between France and Germany for hundreds of years. Depending on who ruled it, did they try and make any changes to kind of the wine-growing profile of the region?
Well, I always tell people that it's German grapes made by French guys.
All right.
Okay, let's get into German.
As a matter of fact, kids that grow up in Alsace today have to learn German and French in school.
Hmm.
It's kind of interesting.
All I can say is Wollen Sie eine Handtaschen kaufen. Anybody know what that means?
I do.
It means, do you want to buy a purse? Okay.
German.
So to my left is a native Texan, who is now the executive chef at Pabu in the Four Seasons. And, Jonah, I want to know how come you don't talk Texas.
Such a stupid thing.
No, why not? He's born and raised in Texas.
For what?
No, I wasn't born in Texas. I don't know where you got that
on
information.
On your biography, it says he's a native Texan.
Well, I grew up I was born in California, but I grew up in Texas. So
all right.
That's probably the reason why I don't have the draw, the southern draw.
All right. Well,
so let's just start from the beginning. It's the one-year anniversary? Pabu, what's the
we
one
just
year?
Had our one
right?
year.
Right? You just had your 1 year anniversary.
Yep.
My birthday. Perfect.
Yeah.
So
another reason for me to have pain. Now she'll say, take me to Pabu.
That's okay. I've already been. And you didn't have to take me, which made it even better. Let's talk about Pabu and your experience, because you guys, you know, came out in the new hotel, also Wit and Wisdom, you know, a couple months earlier. So you're part of this whole Mike Omina crew. Tell us what the last year has been like.
The last year went by fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot going on since we opened. I think we really, you know, caught on, I think, at the beginning of the year And we've been fairly busy since, so mm-hmm. which is good, a good busy.
Well, since it was an izakaya, mm-hmm. and which was sort of new for the Baltimore area, did you feel like you had to educate the clientele who were coming in? I mean, not just the hotel guests, but sort of Harbor East was kind of new anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had to educate people to kind of come over to that area.
Yeah.
So did you find like getting them to understand what an izakaya was and what the food is? Was there a curve?
Yeah, there definitely was. I think, you know, our first 6 months of opening, I probably changed the verbiage on the menu at 6 or 7 times mm-hmm. at least. And it's just more of making things that are a little bit more familiar. You know, if you put all this Japanese terminology on the menu, no one's going to understand it.
Right.
So it's still the same preparation as the different verbiage. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely it was a learning curve for when we first opened to now.
There's a very heavy emphasis on sake. You have how many different kinds?
We have, I think the largest.
A billion?
Yeah, we have the largest allocation of sake on the East Coast.
Really?
Yeah, we do.
So does that impact, I mean, it goes back to how you and Tiffany Don Soto, who's mm-hmm. your sake
sommelier. She's here.
She's here in a bottle. But I mean, you know, you guys have to work together so that what she serves and what you serve and what she recommends and all of that, that, you know, that they're in sync. But you're also talking to palates that are probably unfamiliar with that whole combination. So how challenging is that?
Well, I mean, it's actually not. I mean, Tiffany's great to work with, and I think she makes the pairings very easy. And when you have such a large selection, you have so many different, different sakes you could go to. A great pairing for sake could be even, you know, something that's fried, and that's perfect for an izakaya because it's just bar food. It's just whatever it is.
Well, for those who haven't been into Pabu or mm-hmm. into an izakaya, I mean, can you explain what some of the bar food is like?
Well, an izakaya traditionally is a place you would go to drink, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's beer or sake, whatever it might be.
I see your sake is already empty.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I well, start, no, I started without it's a place everyone, to, sorry.
Where, it's a place where Jonah goes to do it intravenously. Yeah. And
so,
I'm calling you out on air.
I know.
Oh, don't worry, we'll bleep it. Mm-hmm.
An izakaya is a place where you go drink, and then there's food that's incorporated in that. Whether it's something that's, you have pork belly and kimchi, or you have, some fried chicken or whatever it might be, it's a good foundation for something that's a little bit more delicate to work with something that's sort of salty, a little bit heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great match.
Okay. Yeah. And you have a tremendous sushi program as well. So can you tell people who haven't had the opportunity, like David, to go to Pabu yet?
Oh, rub it in.
Today is actually International Sushi Day.
Shut up.
So everyone should go have sushi after this.
I knew that. I have some raw fish in the back seat.
So we have a huge sushi program. So that's our modern take on an izakaya. We,
mm-hmm.
you know, normally you wouldn't go into an izakaya in Japan and find sushi.
Mm-hmm.
But here we incorporate that sushi program because we're sourcing just great product. And we just let the product speak for itself. So, mm-hmm. We're really excited that, you know, people in Baltimore have really taken on what we're serving and what we're doing, at the restaurant. So we're very happy with it.
Okay. And,
wait, no.
Did you have a question? Because there's a lot going on there.
I want to know. I read in all the materials that you guys sent over about tatami dinners, but I don't know what that sounds like. Lakota Sioux to me.
Well,
tatami. What is that?
What we've started doing every month, I've been doing a special highlighted dinner on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And this month, we did a beer dinner. And then last month, we did a sake dinner. And then the week or the month before that, we did a spring cocktail menu.
Is everybody there just tanked all the time?
All the time.
Okay.
All the time. You haven't been in, so.
Right. Sounds like my kind.
your kind of place. So.
It's a good thing
we're
in a hotel.
Still waiting on you.
Yeah.
We have the reserves. Don't worry, David.
I don't even have a good comeback for that.
So that's a monthly dinner that you're doing?
Yes.
So it's based on what you're pouring?
No, not exactly what we're pouring, but it's paired. Everything is paired with a beverage, whether it's a cocktail, beer, sake. So it's something that's not served on the menu at all. It's just food that sort of inspires me for that month.
Cool.
And then different themes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we only have a minute, but you are also doing some classes, which I think sound like a lot of fun. Is that something you've been doing all along, or you just started doing it?
We've been doing sushi classes for, we actually started them last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were going to stop this year, but we continued them on. Our first class, we only had 4 people, and now we book.
Yeah, I would imagine it'd be very popular. I mean, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but like the first month, it was very discouraging. We saw 4 people come, and 2 people were media.
Oh.
So we knew that there was...
And is there something wrong with media, Jonah?
No, absolutely not, no.
For their husbands, no. Jonah?
No. It was like one of those things where you sort of twist the arm and they come in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
now
it's
that's
been
not
great.
The case.
No, that's not the case.
All right, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I know you guys are doing a huge blowout for
July. Yeah.
And I want to talk about that because I want to go.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Celebrate Central Farm Market's 5th anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at 2 great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The 2 central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Jonah Kim, who's the executive chef at Pabu in the Four Seasons in Baltimore.
And before we get into your July 4th celebrations, you did bring in some sake.
Mm-hmm.
So can we talk a little bit about it? It's not that I don't like sake, but it's not something I would ever think of ordering. So tell us about what you brought in today and what I should be looking for, tasting, and everything.
This is a Tokubetsu Junmai.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a lot of... the nose is very floral.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would get some honeysuckle... some, you know, muskmelon from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice rich sake. This would go well with seafood, anything with a little bit of salt in it. You know, mm-hmm. just a little salinity. You know, oysters would be great. Mm-hmm. Even prosciutto would be nice. Prosciutto melon. So.
That's which we happen to have.
That's a very Japanese food. I have a question for you. Why do people in some restaurants, why do they heat it up almost to you know.
That's bad sake, right?
Yeah. So
is that to cover the taste? Exactly.
You have hot sake to sort of mask the taste, and it's not a good premium. They wouldn't use premium rice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. So they're pushing cheapo stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
This sake is very good, though. It's very tasty. It's very different. Do you guys do cocktails with sake?
Yes, we do.
We actually
use shochu as well.
Oh, I like shochu.
So shochu, we have a couple cocktails with sake as well. So yeah, we have a great cocktail program. Actually, this week we're coming up with our summer menu. So we have four new cocktails on this week.
Okay, well, let's talk quickly. So you're bringing the Little D.C.
to Baltimore for
July 4th. Tell us about it.
4th of July, I've wanted to do something really fun. And I thought, you know what, why don't I ask a couple chef friends to come to Baltimore and we just cook and have fun and make people happy. So I invited Kyle Bailey.
He is fun.
Birch and Barley.
Tiffany McIsaac, his wife. Yeah. And Will Morris.
Who
I was with last night.
Yeah, I know. You took my dinner seat last night. I'm sure
it's very
interesting.
You know who I was with? My children watching a Disney movie. You suck.
Don't you all feel bad for him?
I could have been there, too.
Not you, Jonah. She does.
I was working.
All right. Well, let's make sure everybody knows how to find you.
Well, we're going to come back to you in a little bit. We want to talk.
But I want to do that.
Okay,
let's give the web address and the street address so everybody knows who's listening knows how to find you.
The web address is www.pabuizakaya.com.
Mm-hmm.
Our street address is 725 Alisana. It's in the Four Seasons. We're not really connected to in the lobby, but we're in the Four Seasons.
They could tell you how to get there.
Exactly. If you get to the Four Seasons.
They'll tell you how to get there.
And I have been to the Four Seasons. It's a stunning property.
It is a stunning property.
It's a great visit. All right. So let's go back to Mark.
All right, Mark.
Hey, Mark. You're on, baby.
You're on.
So this was very light and delicious. I liked it. And I'm not a big...
how dry it is?
It is dry.
It's delicious, yeah.
I don't know. We do bring on quite a bit of sommeliers, and everybody always wants to pour a Riesling.
Yeah.
It's like the sommelier darling. They're just a little sweet for me. I just don't like them.
Oh, really? You find it sweet, do you?
I do. It's not sweet like in the classic sense.
Yeah.
I find them like sugary.
It's interesting that most people confuse fruity with sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And fruit you taste in the middle of your palate, but sweetness you taste after you swallow.
Right.
I think it has a nice dry finish on it. It's very clean.
Mm-hmm.
It'll age forever.
Will it really?
Yeah, it's really, that's what's very cool about Rieslings is that they have very great longevity.
So they'll change over time? Like with this one, like it's a 2009, in a couple of years, will it be more complex?
In 30 years, it'll smell like cheese. It's kind of interesting.
Is that good?
You know what? In 30 years, I'll smell like cheese, too. What are you going to pour next?
But none of us will be around to find out about
that. You'll be around.
Who knows?
You'll be around. You're a baby.
Yeah.
Well, the theme here with these Alsace wines is Grand Cru today, so I have a Gewürztraminer.
Okay.
You have a what?
A Gewürztraminer.
That sounds like a medical condition.
Yeah.
I had a Gewürztraminer once, but it went away.
This is one of the great... wines of Alsace.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown in Germany and Austria as well.
And can you tell us a little bit about it, about the wine? And
it comes from a Grand Cru called Zinkopfli, which is in the town of Zollmatz in the south-central Alsace, south of Colmar. Colmar is the southern end of what's called the wine route in Alsace.
And what would you serve this with?
Foie gras.
Foie gras.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so am I on?
Yes, you are. Let's move on.
You want to give this a big sniff.
I am giving it a very...
Yeah. It's
distinct. Fragrant, exactly. It's very... Here. I mean, it looks like honey.
It smells like lychees.
It does smell like lychees. Here. Absolutely. There we go.
I will give it a big sniff at some point, too. When it comes around.
Well, in the meantime,
I met these guys. What we were talking about doing a commercial with the local Fox station, I think, for Bagby's restaurant group. And I met Chris Becker and Dave Seal and a bunch of other folks. And it blew me away to find out what's going on with all the restaurants that you guys have down there. I had no idea. These are the guys that are taking Baltimore by storm. We've got Chris Becker with us,
who
is the executive chef for the Bagby Group, right? Is that, do I have that right? Yeah. What are you?
I am the executive chef.
Well, then then I have it right, man. Yeah. And Tim Riley, who's the master mixologist, is that right too, Tim?
That is correct.
All right, so, you know, I guess I wanted to really start with Chris because, you know, you started Fleet Street.
Yes.
And you graduated from what became the Stratford University, you know, culinary school, and suddenly you're one of the most celebrated chefs in Baltimore, and your name is starting to spread around the East Coast. How did that happen?
Don't be shy. Just cooked a lot, really. just did stages around, you know, wherever I went, Chicago, in Little Washington, things like that. Then I got married too early, so... that pretty much ended.
You aren't the only one.
Well,
yeah.
Well, no, you're...
So that pretty much ended going
Based on my
going
experience, you get
state.
Married a couple of times, man, so that's right.
No, well, you know, I got married early and ended up staying at the wine market for a long time. And I was there for 6 years. And, you know, having the longevity there, it was a small restaurant. We worked it up to, you know, I think get number 9 in Baltimore Magazine, which was great for us. And I got a call... The owner, David Smith, really liked the restaurant where I was at, and we ended up having a talk. And
he drafted you out of the minors into the majors.
Well, why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of these restaurants, the Bagby Group, and the philosophy, because it is really interesting what you guys are doing there.
I mean, at the end of the day, Fleet Street's a seasonal new American restaurant. Mm-hmm. People want to call it farm to table, and I guess...
Well, they don't have
they
to.
They can, you know what I mean? They can call it whatever
it
they
is.
Want. It is, but I think farm to table is of a style of almost like cuisine. You know what I mean? Like we do use, you know, 20 years ago, they would have called that a restaurant, you know, farm to table, right? Like you
No,
get,
not
you
20,
get,
40, maybe.
Well, maybe 40, but like now it's.
Yeah, but you guys
you
are doing
this
something.
I understand. With
what
you.
You're saying is that farm to table has become a PR term.
Yeah, but
I understand
exactly.
Where
Let
you're
me jump
going
in, fellas, because the
ahead.
Difference is you own your own farm. Cunningham
we
Farm
do.
Is 400 acres.
Exactly.
And you're sourcing, I know this from our first meeting, and thanks to David Seal over here, and I got all the info. I mean, you guys are sourcing a lot of your produce and starting to source your meats and your poultry and all that from the farm, right?
Right, yeah. We have two fully operational greenhouses, about 12 acres that we have planted on.
And what can we get a little history? Like, when did the farm start? Like, were the restaurants there first and then the farm came later? How did that all...
Well, the land was always there.
Okay.
David always had the land, and then he opened Bagby's, and he wanted to... He wanted to do the farm to table concept and open 1010, and then the farm began.
Okay.
Started slow and just doing a couple crops.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have about 12.
But was that something he was really eager to do? Was he looking to provide most of the product for his restaurants?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is he achieving that now?
The majority of it right now.
Okay.
David Smith.
This time of year.
Doesn't do anything small.
Okay.
Yeah, understand.
I don't understand. I don't know him, and I don't know anything about what he's doing.
Replace David Smith with Donald Trump, and that's about where you are.
Own Sinclair Broadcasting Group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great guy. And that's what he wanted to do. That was his vision, and that's what he told me he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really necessarily ask why. I thought it was great.
Right.
When I got with the farmer, you know, all I said was like,
so it wasn't something you personally were passionate about?
I am passionate about great product, you know,
okay.
Always using local product. I just make sure it's sustainable and ethically raised, and
right,
that's how we treat everything. And this charcuterie plate was made with, these were Duroc pigs that came off our farm in Sparks, Maryland.
Okay.
So we have three different breeds right now, a Red Wattle, a Berkshire Cross, and then a Duroc.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 24 total right now.
My second wife was a...
That's lovely.
Duroc.
And recently, I also got
very
named...
very small man. That's what you are.
I know, but with a big audience, it's great.
Okay, go ahead.
So I was asked to be the chief operations officer when all this started growing, because I think I followed David's vision and he liked it. And so I brought in Chris Amendola, who was at worked with Sean Brock in South Carolina.
Right.
Also at Blue Hill.
Up in upstate
and,
New York.
And Blue Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
English is, yeah, in Orlando. And lastly, just prior to coming with on with us, he was Blue Hill at Stone Bar.
Well, I want to jump over and talk to Tim Riley a little, because I read up on you, and you're not a guy that just started brewing beers in his basement and suddenly ended up here.
No,
you,
sir.
You went to the CIA.
Yes, sir.
And okay, turn the mic towards you. Yes. You can
and
turn
I,
it.
And
there
I don't
go.
Mean the Central Intelligence Agency. So were you always a beer and spirits and cocktails kind of guy, or did you start off aiming to be a chef? And
No, I never seriously wanted to be a chef. I had done a lot of bartending over the years. I started as a bar back in, just a neighborhood restaurant in Baltimore, and went to CIA, and one of the first nights I was there, actually a champagne company was there and presented a whole line of champagnes, including, some of the marquee names, Dom Perignon, Tattinger. And I fell in love with wine at that point, and it quickly
really
branched
hard
out
when
into
you start
cocktails.
At that level.
Yeah.
You know, it's
hard to
Corbel,
go down from there. Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Fair enough. Yeah. But it was an exciting time. And
not that there's anything wrong with Corbel. I'm
not
just
at all. But,
saying.
So anyway, right around 2005, 2006, when I got out to CIA, was when the cocktail culture was really starting to boom. You saw bars like PDT in New York and, an associated scene in San Francisco. And I really caught on to that. And I've really tried to bring that sense of mixology and, real style to drinks. I think, you see different bars doing different kinds of things. But we try and really put a focus on elegance in our cocktails and really try and do drinks that match up really well with chef style of cuisine.
Well,
we only have a minute.
I want to ask about this one because
it looks like
butterbeer at
Disney World.
We actually do a version of butterbeer. That's not what we have today. Actually, today we have a drink that's called a light rail.
Butterbeer is almost undrinkable, but let's try this.
You got to have my version. what this has is actually Union Brewing. They're a new brewery. Just got started about 6 months ago in Baltimore. We're actually doing a July 4th event with them, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Okay,
right,
I got to cut
fireworks.
You right here. I'm so sorry. We're going to totally get into this. I'm told we have to take a commercial break.
Absolutely.
When we come back, we'll get the full 4-on-1 on this drink, that drink, and what you're doing on July 4th.
Hold that thought, Jim.
Can't wait.
This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Kick off summer at the Safeway Barbecue Battle, June 22nd and 23rd, to benefit the Boys and Girls Clubs. 30 bands on 3 stages, including The Wailers and Roy Ayers on the Pepsi Next Lay soundstage, and Kristen and the Noise and EU on the famous Dave's music stage. Free food in Safeway's Sampling Pavilion, the National Pork Barbecue Championship, Ranchers Reserve Beef Contest, Purdue's Sizzlin' Chicken Contest, plus NBA Nation, and lots more. Easy to get to by metro. Visit bbqdc.com.
Escape the everyday to the close by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
Are you looking to go abroad and make a difference? Consider volunteering or studying abroad on a YFU gap year to Thailand, Romania, or Ghana. Earn course credit, live locally, and become a global citizen. YFU offers gap year as well as summer, semester, and year-long programs to 40 countries. Call 1-800-TEENAGE or visit YFUUSA.org to learn more about Youth for Understanding study abroad programs. Change your life. Change the world. Youth for Understanding.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Tim Riley and Chris Becker from the Bagby Group and Fleet Street Market and all those other groovy restaurants.
Fleet Street Kitchen.
Kitchen. Whose market? What?
It's down the street from us.
Is there one?
Yes.
There really is?
Yes.
The heck with them.
Yeah.
Fleet Street Kitchen, I said. So you were talking about this event that you have coming up, which sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We have a July 4th event. We're going to be doing Chef Chris is going to be cooking along with Chef Chris Amendola, who's the executive chef of Fleet Street Kitchen. Tay Strain, who is a good friend of Chef Becker's out of New York City, is going to be coming down. We're going to be partnering with Union Brewing, which is a new brewery here in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. The cocktail you have in front of you called the Light Rail features that along with a little bit of bourbon and some cherry liqueur. And it's going to be a pre-fireworks event, if you will. So,
okay.
4 to 9 o'clock roughly. And
there are fireworks in this drink.
No, what trick is this?
So that is the one that actually you have to your left is the one that I was speaking about, the light
rail. That's the one with the beer.
The drink in front of you have here is actually one, and this really exemplifies our cocktail program
at
Fleet Street Kitchen.
It's
so it's called the Creole. It's a mixture of rye whiskey and some rosé vermouth that we made ourselves, actually from rosé just south of here, Barbersville Vineyards. We use their rosé of Nebbiolo to craft this, along with some house-made bitters and a little bit of Benedictine. And so it's again, a light, elegant cocktail that we think pairs really well with the style of food.
Is that something you guys are looking to do, like partnering with Barbersville? Are you looking to partner with different farms, different wineries, different breweries to create other products? It seems like there's a lot of collaborations going on locally here in D.C.
Yeah,
are you guys
absolutely
doing a lot of that in Baltimore?
Yeah. I mean, again, we have really good relationships, not just obviously we have our own farm, again, Cunningham Farms, but we work Chef Chris's relationships go back years with many local farmers from his days at Winemark. And so we work with them. But as I've gotten to know Baltimore, we started to work with, again, local breweries, Stillwater Artisanal Ales Union that we mentioned, as well as wineries that are in the area, Black Ankle, which is out towards Mount Airy in Maryland.
We know them. We've had them on the show.
They're really great people and do a great job with their wines, as well as, you know, again, people like Barbersville down in Virginia, of course.
Well, Chef, let me ask you a question. So you have all these different restaurants. For people who haven't been able to go to the restaurants, can you tell us a little bit about the differences between them?
Yeah, 1010's kind of come as you are, lower price point, casual, fun, energetic atmosphere, whereas, you know, you come in for just a cocktail and a couple apps, or you can come in for three courses. More fun, has some whimsical plays on, you know, they make their own, like, elderflower and scotch bonnet hot sauce, and they do, like, wings, or they do steam buns and stuff like that, more finger food. Whereas Fleet is, you know, we try to encompass the...
Fleet is new, right?
About 7 months.
It's okay, so it's new. Okay.
So we encompass the whole dining experience, you know, why we don't want to be overly, you know, close off our market and only appeal to a certain demographic. It is a higher end, higher price point.
It's a beautiful place. I mean, I was surprised when I went in. Well, I have been there.
Yeah, but you didn't eat there.
Didn't I eat something?
No.
You might have.
Let's pretend.
He did.
It was delicious.
He's eating something now. There we go.
Whatever I ate was really, really good.
I remember because
Tim was pouring drinks down my throat. But it's a very pretty place. I think what's cool is that the pizza, what is it called?
Bagby Pizza is
right there. You've got your own alley and your own outdoor seating that's really...
And that's where our July 4th event is actually going to take place, is right in our courtyard. So
it'll be like a block party?
Very much like
a
block party.
And then you go to Jonas. Because ours is pre and his is during, right?
Right.
Have a little beer at your place,
a
little sake.
I'm going to ask you to come over here. Because what I thought would be fun, since we have all this Baltimore representation in studio, was to talk a little bit about Baltimore. It's really come up in the last couple of years. There's more and more.
Well, let me jump in and ask a question. Is Washington coming to Baltimore now to dine? I mean, they were coming to the Inner Harbor to the Maryland Science Center and the aquarium and to eat, you know, maybe Little Italy. But are you finding that it's sort of spreading out and you're seeing folks you don't normally see?
Yeah, I can't speak for Jonah, but at Fleet Street Kitchen and 1010, we've definitely seen that. Fleet Street in particular, I think Chef Becker's food has been a real draw. And we've seen people come from, you know, further south, Alexandria, into Virginia and whatnot to actually come and have Fleet Street. But 1010's a little more of a neighborhood restaurant for us. Yeah.
Absolutely agree.
Jonah?
Okay, so Pabu, well, I mean, you guys are the Four Seasons Hotel. You got to get in front of the mic.
Not just within the hotel, but I think just as a city as a whole. You know, I believe Baltimore is standing on its own other than, you know, being, you know, next to D.C., being that bastard child, you know? It's not the bastard child.
I just want to say I'm not responsible.
I don't know if I was not allowed to say
you're
that.
That's not one of the seven words. That's not one of the seven words.
I think D.C. is definitely coming into Baltimore. Yeah.
Well, and let me ask also, so when you guys go out on your own, you know, I mean, other than your restaurants, of course, where would you tell people, like, Jonah, where are you going late night? Like, after you guys close... your restaurant. I mean, are there great places for late night dining? Like, what bar do you go to? Like,
dirty diners.
There are diners.
Yeah. Yeah. Dirty diners. Yeah. Or like 24-hour diners. Like, or Korean barbecue,
yeah,
definitely.
Nam Kang. And yeah. Like,
okay, wait. What's the Korean barbecue? Because I remember that one night I was there in Baltimore late. I did not go, but a lot of other people went. Yeah. Audrey Slade was there, actually.
Youngkok.
Where did they all go? What is it?
Youngkok.
That's what it's called?
Yep. Wait, that is one of the seven words.
That's why people in Washington, D.C. are coming to Baltimore.
Right.
For Youngkok.
But no, there's a great Korean barbecue place. They actually use real charcoal, too, which is awesome.
As opposed to?
Gas.
Gas.
Oh, yeah, more flavor. Fascinating.
My wife and I actually buy vats of kimchi from, and they just throw them in the, you know, the big garlic tubs.
Yeah.
And they just stuff it in there, and they're like, here you go.
It's all about recycling and Korean cuisine.
very efficient.
So is there a huge, is there a lot of Korean dining in Baltimore?
Late night, yes.
Late night,
yeah.
Okay.
They're up until like 4 in the morning.
So I got a question. Do the chefs, because here there's a ton of camaraderie among the local chefs, and there really isn't, they're not competitive. They're all buds. And
well, they are
all,
competitive, but they all are.
But they're
they all
really,
hang
they're
out.
Really, I mean, and from Mike Isabella and, you know, Christophe Pateau at the top to just up and comers, they all get along. They all hang together.
Well, Jonah was that here way? For the Mandu dinner.
Is it
I mean,
that
you know
way
like.
In Baltimore? Are you guys?
It's getting more and more so. Like,
I think so.
Jonah
yeah.
and I were at an event together, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, for there's a restaurant in Hamden called Food Market.
Mm-hmm.
They had their 1 year anniversary, so they invited a bunch of different chefs and people, you know, making whatever baked goods or cooking something in their kitchen. So there is a community of chefs that get together and really share, you know, celebratory times or just any kind of anything really.
And that's great. I mean, because I've born and raised in Baltimore. I had a job in Baltimore when I was 13 and like. You know, there's one name in town
you
for
know,
a long
14?
Time.
You look.
there was one name in town, and for a long time. And now it was honestly in the last 3 years where you see people getting together, doing joint dinners, doing wine dinners together, and it's great. I think it's great for Baltimore.
Yeah. Great.
About 2 years ago, we started in Baltimore Bartenders Guild too, which is something that's been in D.C. for quite a while.
Yeah, the D.C. Bartenders Guild is pretty big.
I think it's speaking to the beverage side of it. I know that the head bartender Nick Jones at Jonah's Restaurant is a member too, and we do a pretty good job, I think, in Baltimore with cocktails. And again, there's a lot of famous bars in D.C., but we have some that are up and coming.
I think
in Baltimore.
The next time you do a joint dinner, call me. Okay.
We're doing
we'll
a joint
wife.
Dinner at Young Guy.
Wait, is it a joint dinner or a joint dinner?
It's all on where the emphasis is
yeah,
on
right.
joint.
Okay.
Okay, we got it. All right, so we want to go back to Mark Slater. Mark?
Hey.
This was a lovely, lovely wine, which I will not butcher. I can't pronounce this one at all.
Gewürztraminer.
Gewürztraminer. Anybody can say that.
It.
Give me a sip for crying out loud.
Oh,
anyone,
please.
Sorry.
Anyone can say it.
I just said it.
I cannot say it. Right.
That's
I
easy for you to say.
You did real well, David.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on at Bastille for the next couple of weeks. I know you guys you just did a huge dinner. You're going to be doing another one soon.
We just did a dinner with Forrest Pritchard from Smith Meadow Farms.
Right.
That was very successful.
Glad to hear.
Next week, oddly enough, we have an Alsatian wine dinner where we'll showcase these wines with a nice menu that Christoph put together.
Okay.
Still some seats open.
Okay. When is that dinner?
The 25th.
The 25th. Okay. So coming up soon.
Uh-huh.
And so you're pouring us. Now, I don't think a lot of people think of Pinot Noir as an Alsatian wine.
It's very true. It's relatively hard to find. They don't make it every year because how far north the vineyards are.
Mm-hmm.
And the years that they do get it, sometimes it's not as good as you'd like.
Okay.
This one, I think, is delicious.
Tell us a little bit about it.
It's a small single vineyard. The producer's name is Jean Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Middelweer, which is just a little bit north of Colmar.
Okay.
It's very clean. It's easy to drink. It's very different from Burgundy or from California.
Well, and it's a young wine, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
It's
2011.
Is that normal for a Pinot Noir from that region?
Pinots in general drink
young.
Well when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
But to find an Alsatian one, normally when they're very good, they tend to keep them.
Right.
They tend to keep them for themselves.
Right. Now, will this one age or no?
It will. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not like Riesling. Riesling literally can go 30 to 50 years,
which is amazing.
All right. I'm going to jump in and stop you kids from chatting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And Mark, you're going to pour one more wine. Yes.
The red wine.
All right.
Just
great.
Been poured, yeah.
And because I want to get to Paul Dom, and I'm pronouncing it right.
You got it.
I mean, Dom that Paul.
I've heard that a lot as a kid.
I'm sure you have. And Ndima Ugochukwu, right?
Ndima Ugochukwu.
I was close. I was really close. From Brain Food.
Correct.
And you guys have an amazing organization. I guess you've been on. When's the last time you were on?
We've not been on, but we've had Nikki as a judge at our
annual grill-off.
Right.
No, we brought you on.
No, you were on many moons ago.
We did. We brought you on a while ago. I'm almost positive.
You better remember that.
It must have been one of these days with mixologists in the studio, I'm guessing.
Well, let's start from the beginning.
Well, let's talk about, you know, what Brain Food's mission is and what you're all about.
Sure. So we're a youth development organization. We use food and cooking to teach life skills to D.C. young people, mostly high school students, but some middle schoolers. We have three kitchens across the district.
And where are they?
Columbia Heights, Mount Vernon Square, and Chinatown. So we've sort of, we're colonizing the Green Line. we draw students from every ward in the district. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the basic level, you give a young person a chocolate chip cookie recipe. Read, do math, follow directions, work in teams, manage time, communicate with others. All the kind of skills that we all use in our day jobs, whether you're in the food business or not. And we've continued to grow upon that. And we've gone from one program now to four different programs.
Now, do you proactively go out there and try and essentially throw out a net and harvest kids for the program? Or do they? Because I'm just wondering about the kids from like Ward 7 and 8 that are a lot farther from you. Are you drawing from there as well?
Yeah, we draw from every single ward.
Awesome.
You know, we've been around long enough that, people are now finding us. So we do some active recruitment in the schools, but we're finding word of mouth. Younger siblings, younger neighbors are joining the program. We just did an event a few weeks ago where we had three different siblings who'd been through the program over the last 5 years. And frankly, we have a wait list every single year. So if we did real active recruitment, we would have 1,000 kids on our
wait list.
I want to talk a little bit about the program itself, like how it started and how it's grown. Because what you started as is not really what you are now. I mean, it's really evolved.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I've been at Bremen for 10 years, which is always kind of shocking to say that out loud. I still have a few hairs left in my head.
Yeah, why are you looking at me when you say that?
Because I'm not looking at anybody else.
Yeah.
Because I have lots of hair on my head.
You're outnumbered on a lot of
until you fall asleep tonight, sucker.
So we went from, you know, one tiny little kitchen in Columbia Heights with 8 or 10 kids. Now we have three kitchens. We've grown from adding a second kitchen in Chinatown 5 years ago, adding our newest space in Mount Vernon Square, right a block right across the street from the new Marriott Marquis that's going up now.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have a 3,000-square-foot garden right on K Street, so we're growing our food right in the middle of downtown D.C., which is the coolest thing going on in town.
I was going to ask you about Urban Ag, so...
Okay, yeah. Well, wait. We have to. I'm so sorry. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have plenty of time with you so we can talk about your fabulous garden, what the kids are learning, and what they really walk away with. Great. And then the Burger Bash. Okay. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
And hallelujah, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking brain food, which clearly after listening to this broadcast, you know I need. But you were talking about your programs, Urban Ag. Now, how many kids total are involved?
Now we're up to about 225 direct service, and through our MVP program, which I'd love to talk about, we're serving hundreds of other people across the city.
It.
So we've gone from a program where we bring young people in for after-school programming, where we teach them how to cook and eat healthy amongst these other life skills, is now we're training young people like Nadima to go into the community and teach you guys how to cook healthy food. So we're training them.
I dare you.
Yeah. It'd be a challenge. It'd be a challenge.
She's like, please, make me a student again. Not him.
So we've just completed our second year where we've trained between 15 and 20 high school students to teach other folks in the community how to cook healthy food. So younger kids, older kids.
Well, I want to hear from Nadima.
Tell us a little bit how you got involved in the program and how you're going out there and educating other people.
Yeah, actually, they came to my school during lunchtime.
Which is? Mm-hmm. Which school?
Oh, Banneker High School.
Okay.
Yeah. She was like, don't you know what lunchtime is? Duh.
Every time is lunchtime.
And I was kind of interested because I didn't know how to cook at all. So I reached out and I started the program in the summer of my 9th grade, where I loved it. And I ended it in my 11th grade year. So
good for you.
You just graduated from high school.
Yeah, I just graduated. I'm going to the University of Pittsburgh.
Good for you. That's awesome. And
thank
what
you.
Do you want to, now that you know how to cook, is it something that you it's just now a part of one of your life skills, or is it something like, are you teaching other people like Paul was talking about?
Oh,
what
yeah.
is it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We learned how to create a smoothie mm-hmm. called a berry smoothie. And I made it at home ever since. My mother always buys strawberries, orange juice. She put it on her list, and we make it every morning for her to drink before she goes. So
that's terrific.
Yeah.
So
my
you
kids
go to...
don't make me anything.
That's because you're selfish and evil. I get all kinds of stuff from them.
Sure.
What are you going to study at Pittsburgh? Is he going to stay in food and nutrition and all of that? Or is
oh,
he going to
no.
do like engineering or something?
Yeah, more in computer science. It was just more, yeah.
So how, Paul, how do you help these kids who graduate from your program get out into the community and teach? And who are they teaching?
So what we do is we actually bring in,
okay,
we bring in acting coaches. Mm-hmm. We bring in people that are that do motivational speaking, and we actually teach public speaking, which is the coolest thing to watch happen, by the way. If you've never seen this happen, bring people that are deathly nervous to get up in front of a room full of people, and over a span of a couple of weeks, watch them learn to give their brain food.
Well,
elevator
Nadima,
speech.
She just shoved a note over here and said, I want my own show.
She's giving me the elbow under
right.
the table.
Like, hey, give me my
get
mic
away
back.
From the, you're
slide
hogging
over,
the,
man.
You're hogging the mic, old man. And so what we've done is we taught them how to teach. And then we get inquiries constantly from other youth serving organizations, from schools, from community centers and churches across the city saying, can you come teach us this? People are now understanding.
But when
that,
you say this, what is it that they want to learn from you?
So how to make healthier versions of classic foods that we all eat, how to make healthier versions of the things they get from the takeout. So we make healthier versions of Chinese food. We make a healthier version of
Korean barbecue?
Of fried chicken. Mm-hmm. We made a healthier version of chicken Alfredo.
Yeah.
And so we find that we're doing a lot of substitutions and putting kale and things from our
isn't
garden.
That, isn't that an oxymoron, it's a healthier version of chicken Alfredo?
It's tough to do, but we did it. We did it, and our students tested the recipe, and then they would take it on the road, and they would have their carts, and they'd get on the metro and go to different schools, and they taught everybody from elementary school, first and second graders, all the way up through adults. We've actually done adult classes, so it's the coolest thing to watch a group full of teenagers standing up in the front of the room as the experts and having grown-ups in the room saying, I want to learn how to make this. We made a winter minestrone soup this year with cabbage and broccoli come out that was still growing in our garden in December. So the cool thing is we're now using our own food.
Well, let's talk about that.
Which is pretty fun.
Where are you growing all this food, and are the kids involved in the growing process as well?
So the kids, now that that summer program is starting next week, kids will be much more involved. So I never thought I would say this in a million years, but Brain Food actually has a part-time farmer on staff. Not what I envisioned 10 years ago, but pretty cool. And I look at harvest schedules, which
you
I never thought I would
do. You got your own version of Cunningham Farm.
You, right. Sort of. Mini version.
Watch out, Chris.
Yeah,
Becker.
We're coming.
Stand by.
I don't think my landlord's ready for pigs yet, but
okay.
But I would dig that. And so part of our growth plan was if we're going to add a third location, we needed to start growing some of our own food because number one, it's a great teaching tool to show people that you can grow food anywhere,
right.
And grow great, fresh, local, you know, really cool stuff. And we have 3,000 square feet. We'll pull probably 700 or 800 pounds of food out of there this summer. And we're starting a brand new program this summer called the Brain Food Box Project, which is a mini CSA program.
I've read about it. It's very cool.
And so we're going to have 15 former Brain Food graduates on the payroll this summer working in the garden, harvesting fresh produce, and using some of that fresh produce to do prepared foods. And once a week, you come get your box, and it'll be half fresh produce, half prepared, all done by Brain Food students.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I'll sign up for that. That's cool.
It's really
cool. That's pretty
cool. Now let's talk about the Burger Bash. Because you guys do because you do a grill off every year. So why do another thing like this?
Because apparently I like to worry about weather-related events.
Right.
So it's going to be outside.
We always do out.
It's June 30th at Post on the patio?
Yeah. No one will let me grill inside for some strange reason. So it's a takeoff of the grill off, which we've done for 6 straight years. Nikki's been a judge the last 2 or 3 years for sure.
Yeah, thanks very much, by the way.
Yeah. Well,
he's better looking than you.
And I have a better palate. So go ahead.
All right. And the burger battle really started with
a conversation
with Mark Culler, which most of the folks in this room know, the owner of Proof and Estadio and soon
well,
to be
actually,
open.
Normally if you had DC people in here, they may know.
All right, your listeners know.
Baltimore may not
your
know.
Your listeners know. And I was having lunch with Mark saying, you know, we're growing. We need to figure out another event to raise some money. And we realized that nobody was doing a high-end burger competition in DC. And that's really what it was about.
All right, and I want to point out to you that my wife is not a burger person. She eats her burgers naked. So if you want a real burger person,
it just means without a
talk
bun.
To the beast,
I'm a
baby.
Purist.
Yeah, you're a purist.
I don't want the bun.
And you've
I
got everybody. I'm looking here. You've got Scott Druneau, Heider.